Palestinian factions say that rising violence by Israeli settlers and soldiers in the occupied West Bank needs to be stopped. Archbishop Desmond Tutu, an icon in South Africa's fight against apartheid, dies at the age of 90. A Chinese city of 13 million people in lockdown for a fourth day over a surge in COVID cases. I'm Behrouz Najaf. It's good to have you with us. A top story this hour, Palestinian Authority urging the international community to intervene to protect Palestinians in the face of increasing settler violence that has left hundreds injured in the West Bank in recent days. The authority says that the Israeli regime must be held to account for a surge in what it calls terrorist attacks by settlers against defenseless Palestinians. Meantime, Palestinian factions are calling for the formation of local protection committees across the West Bank. Last night, settlers and troops attacked the village of Orka, injuring nearly 250 people. Soldiers targeted them with live bullets, rubber-coated rounds, stun grenades, and tear gas. The village has been a flashpoint of clashes in recent days. It sits near the site of a former settlement. The Israeli military destroyed that settlement in 2005, but now the settlers are saying that they want to return. Now, to get more information on this, I'll be joined from Ramallah by our correspondent, Mona Kandel. Mona, good to have you with us. Tell us more about this incident. And settler violence has always been there against the Palestinians, but recently we are witnessing more and more such violence, and that's backed by Israeli troops. That's the funny part of it.
That's right. It's not clashes between Israeli settlers and Palestinians. It's not like this. Israeli settlers are raiding Palestinian villages and attacking Palestinians under the protection of Israeli forces because the settlers are refusing the Israeli regime to destroy some buildings in the illegal settlement of Homish. It was evacuated in 2005. However, last week, an Israeli settler was killed, and the Israelis said it was a Palestinian ambush, and Palestinians opened fire, killing an Israeli settler in that area. Every day, thousands of Israeli settlers are trying to reach that area. They attack the Palestinians. They storm Palestinian villages, mainly the village of Burqa, northwest Ramallah, that is very close to the illegal settlement of Homish, and they are trying to demonstrate to prevent the destruction of some buildings were left at Homish, and they are demanding the Israeli regime to return back to this illegal settlement that was built on private Palestinian land. That's why Palestinians, of course, would not remain silent. They left their homes, they were in the street demonstrating, protesting, facing the illegal practices and the aggression by the settlers and by the Israeli forces as well. We are speaking about over 260 Palestinians were wounded last night. Many of them sustained serious injuries as the Israeli soldiers used rubber-coated bullets as well as live rounds. But Palestinians are saying they will remain there. They will not allow the settlers to storm their villages and to attack the people or confiscate more land. Some Palestinian officials are saying this is could be the first step of a new intifada and uprising, because there were statements by the Israeli military that they are not able to control the anger of the Palestinians, and more Israeli forces and battalions were sent to northern the occupied West Bank, some the areas between Nablus and Jenin was completely sealed off. Some villages were also shut down, not allowing the Palestinians to leave these villages or enter. As you have mentioned, the Palestinian Authority now is demanding the international community to intervene and to force the Israeli regime to stop the aggression and violence that is being committed by the settlers, backed by the Israeli forces as well.
Okay, let's see if the international community will react to that. Monica and Delphi, Ramallah. Saudi warplanes conduct fresh air raids on Yemen, this time targeting the country's capital, Sana'a. Local media is saying at least three airstrikes were performed against the residential area, and the attacks left a number of houses damaged. No casualties have been reported. Now, this after the Yemeni army said that it hit vital and sensitive Saudi sites in retaliation for the kingdom's escalating aggression against its southern neighbor. Army spokesman Yahya Saria says the positions in the port city of Jizan were targeted with three state-of-the-art precision-guided missiles. The general warned of more, quote, painful operations as long as Saudi Arabia continues its atrocities against Yemen. Riyadh and its allies launched a ruinous war in March 2015, killing hundreds of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, and causing a dire humanitarian situation. Abdul Latif al-Washaleh has been following the developments in Yemen. He has an update on the situation.
The Saudi planes again targeted another residential early area called the Libyan neighborhood. A number of houses were destroyed by the airstrikes, and the military experts say that the Saudi-led coalition is using a specific type of bombs that causes fires. Whatever it's a drop, the fires are there, and the firefighters are on the way to the place that was targeted. The Saudi warplanes, or the Saudi coalition, has also threatened to target the Az-Zubayri Street in the capital, Sana'a, which is a very crowded area. I live there, and they said that they will target this area again today, and they know that it is very crowded and residential area, so they don't have the right to bomb such a place, such area, which is a residential area. I took my family to a farther place, to a few miles away from the airstrikes. They are targeting civilians. They are killing Yemeni people. And unfortunately, the international community remain silent to the Saudi crimes that are being committed on daily basis.
South Africa's anti-apartheid icon Desmond Tutu dies at the age of 90 after decades of fight against injustice. Tutu, South Africa's first black Anglican archbishop, was receiving treatment for prostate cancer at a hospital in Cape Town. President Cyril Ramaphosa says that his death marks ended a farewell to a generation that has struggled for the liberation of South Africa. Tutu won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1984 for his campaign against the country's previous brutal system. He witnessed the downfall of that regime. Tutu was also an outspoken critic of Israeli crimes against Palestinians. He believed that Palestinians have been subjected to Israel's systematic humiliation, similar to the one practiced in apartheid South Africa. Now, in Sudan, security forces clash with ralliers demonstrating against the October military coup d'etat. Riot police used tear gas and water cannon to disperse the protesters. And that after thousands of demonstrators converged on the presidential palace in the capital to express anger and demand a civilian rule. A number of rallies were injured. A similar event was held in Madani, a town south of Khartoum. Authorities cut the internet and telephone lines. The African country has witnessed protests since the military takeover on October 25th and the arrest of civilian leaders. The rallies are staged despite the reinstatement of Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, who was ousted in the coup. Now, staying with Africa, a sad night for Congo. A suicide bombing has killed five people in the city of Beni. A bomb went off at a crowded restaurant as people were celebrating Christmas. 13 others were injured. According to local officials, the attacker activated a bomb at the entrance to the venue after security personnel stopped him. They're blaming the militia group Allied Democratic Forces. The ADF is one of the deadliest armed groups in the troubled region and is allied with Daesh terrorists. It's accused of killing thousands of civilians over the past decade. Congo and neighboring Uganda recently launched a joint operation to try and quell the ADF's bloody attacks. Authorities in Indian-controlled Kashmir have reopened a 125-year-old church that was closed in the 1980s. The Muslim-majority Himalaya region saw the opening of the church on Christmas Eve as a gift to Kashmir's tiny Christian community. Our correspondent has more.
There were heartwarming scenes in Kashmir's main city of Srinagar as St. Luke's Church reverberated with traditional bells and religious prayers for the first time in 3 decades. 125-year-old Heritage Church was given a facelift and thrown open for the public on Christmas Eve. The church is situated at Srinagar's Dalgate area, about half a kilometer distance from the world-famous Dal Lake. For the region's small Christian community, the church reopening is a dream turning into reality. The Muslim neighborhood also felt joyous after the church was made functional and distributed kahwa, a hot beverage prepared with multiple spices, including saffron.
We feel grateful to be a part of the celebration and will do everything to preserve this heritage since it's functional now. We will get to see more people and will hear more prayers.
Official estimates say Kashmir Valley has less than 1,000 Christian citizens. The Muslim majority region has always maintained harmonious relations with the minority community.
Kashmir is a Muslim majority region, but we Christians as a minority have always felt safe here. There is no better example of religious harmony than this place. We are thankful to everyone for maintaining this religious heritage of Christians.
This year, the church has finally reopened after a gap of 3 decades. The Christian community says there can be no better gift than this from the Muslim community on this Christmas. Shahana Bhatt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
A surge in China is pushing daily COVID infections there to a new high in 21 months. The northwestern city of Xi'an is the new hottest spot, reporting most of the cases. The city is now on its fourth day of lockdown with 155 domestically transmitted cases. That's more than double from 2 days ago. The national daily count now standing at 158. That's the highest since China curtailed the nationwide outbreak in early 2020. So far, new infections caused by the Omicron variant have been detected in Xi'an. Authorities have conducted several rounds of mass testing in the city of 13 million. Despite a flare-up, the overall death toll there remains flat. The Christmas travel chaos continues across the world, hundreds of more flights facing cancellations and delays due to the surge in the new COVID variant, Omicron. According to a flight tracking website, on Sunday alone, some 1,100 flights were scrapped worldwide. There were thousands of delays as well. And that's the third day that a staff shortage caused by a rise in COVID cases has placed airlines in a dilemma. Overall, more than 6,000 flights have been canceled over the long Christmas weekend. Chinese airlines are the most affected, with China Eastern scrapping more than 1,000 flights in just 2 days. American Airlines are also hit hard by the crisis. On Saturday, almost 1,000 flights originating from or headed to U.S. airports were canceled. The U.K. left the EU in 2020, ending its 47 years of membership. As part of the divorce package, the two sides agreed to set a set of trade rules. Now, goods from Britain are checked at ports in Northern Ireland, which remains in the EU single market, so trade could move freely across its land border with the Republic of Ireland. But the British government now saying that the arrangement is not working. It wants a new deal. The EU is offering to remove some customs checks, but it's urging the UK to reciprocate in other ways. Side borders are reports on how they got here.
It was supposed to ensure seamless trade between the UK and the EU following Brexit. But the Northern Ireland Protocol has become a problem itself. Or has it? Negotiated in 2019, the protocol was aimed at avoiding a hard border between Northern Ireland, still in the EU single market, and EU member Republic of Ireland. Instead, it's created a regulatory border in the Irish Sea, which acts as a de facto EU-UK frontier. Now, British goods entering Northern Ireland are subject to EU checks and customs regulations. While some have disliked the protocol from day one, others have found it beneficial.
From a business perspective, the Brexit and vaccines and the protocol has been a good thing for the people of the North of Ireland. Obviously, we have the best of both worlds. But if you listen to a small minority that is being platformed by the media, both in Britain and the North of Ireland here, you would think that the protocol was damaging business.
That small minority are elements in the loyalist or unionist community in Northern Ireland, people who wish their country to remain part of the UK. They feel they have been cut off from the mainland. Before becoming Prime Minister, Boris Johnson had told pro-UK parties that he didn't want to see Northern Ireland left abandoned by a border in the sea.
Now, I have to tell you, no British Conservative government could or should sign up to any such arrangement.
That assurance fell by the wayside. A sense of betrayal prevailed. Protests ensued. To the UK government, that meant changing the goalposts.
The protocol is not working. It's completely lost consent in one community in Northern Ireland. It's not doing the thing it was set up to do, protect the Belfast Good Friday Agreement. In fact, doing the opposite.
A fact only admitted after the UK left the EU. The European Union rejected any renegotiation of the deal. Some experts believe the government must have known about the problems ahead from day one of Brexit, calling into question the UK's credibility as an international trading partner.
The UK blames the EU for being inflexible and worrying too much about the so-called integrity of their single market. And Brussels blames London for trying to scrap an international treaty that it signed nearly 2 years ago. Experts say there is no obvious way out of the ongoing stalemate, meaning that Brexit is not exactly done yet. Saipur is up, London.
And with that, we come to the end of this news broadcast from Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. We saw how profit maximization, fierce competition in the global job market led to wages well below the living wage, temporary contracts, and finally to exploitation in the job market right in the middle of Europe. The degree of exploitation in the tree workers case arguably allows a legal classification as forced labor or trafficking in human beings. The global business of exploitation of workers reaches some $44.3 billion U.S. dollars yearly. It's said to be the world's third biggest crime business, following the illegal arms and drugs trade. Reports by the International Labor Organization show that 1.5 million people are trapped in jobs in developed economies, including the European Union. Stay with us for the next part of our program.
Three young lawyers from Prague, Pavel Chizinski, Matas Jira, and Stepanka Mikova, took on his case.
I got in touch with this case first time January 2010 when I was visited by one Vietnamese worker who said that he worked in the forest and that he worked there for 3 months and was not paid. So I started to kind of get deeper in the situation, and he was surprised that I don't know about, you know, the situation because there were hundreds of people. And we started to investigate the case more, and we found that he was absolutely right, that there were hundreds of people. the way how they did it was quite smart and was very efficient. And it was not only for Vietnamese workers. They basically exploited each significant minority in the Czech Republic. They started with Vietnamese, and they kept going with Mongolians, Romanians, Bulgarians, and then they ended up with Slovak citizens.
The attorneys made some disturbing findings as they researched the so-called tree workers case. Many victims were also from the new EU states. Around 600 came from Romania, as well as dozens from Slovakia, Bulgaria, Poland, Lithuania, and Hungary. One address recurs time and again. Uvali Potrati, number 333, on the eastern outskirts of Prague. However, in the street, it is impossible to find a company nameplate, bell, or any other sign of its existence. Dozens of companies are officially registered here. Madeira Servicio, the latest employment agency and one which is still in operation, also gives Potrati as its address. The agency lists Less and Forest as one of its most important clients and expected a turnover of about 3 million euros in 2011. However, there is neither a telephone number nor a name on the webpage. Emails are returned automatically.
Why is a company like Less and Forest getting the tenders when they have been shown to subcontract work to people like Martinac and Mercos? And Martinac has been accused of criminal activity in the past. This is not the first illegal or semi-legal affair that has been connected to him. Why is Less and Forest working with this man or working with associates of this man? And why is the State Forest giving tenders to a company that has associates like this?
The foreign forestry workers are organized into small groups in secluded forest areas, located all over the country. They constantly move location. Hardly anyone seems to take any notice of their situation.
All these Dutch companies, Afomegat and Woodservice Braham, they did not pay not only the workers, they didn't pay people that were offering accommodation capacities for the workers. They didn't pay people who organized the transportation of the workers. They didn't pay anybody. There are only debts behind them.
In summer 2010, there were 70 Romanian tree workers based in the southwest of the country in Jelajna Ruda. Gindrich Martinac came along personally to rent the accommodation for his workers. His promise to pay the landlord, Roman Rushal, was sealed with a handshake. Jan Lenka was born in Slovakia. He is a qualified forest worker and came to the Czech Republic in autumn 2010 after seeing a Wood Service Praha advertisement in the newspaper. After several weeks without pay, he returned home and contacted the attorneys in Prague. In April 2011, Jan Lenka was invited to a first hearing by the Czech police, several months after reporting the matter.
At the beginning, we thought that once we report this case to police, they will set a team because there is a huge number of exploited workers, and they will start to question them and they will start to search for information and do the regular police day-to-day work. Unfortunately, this didn't happen. We filed the criminal complaint in the summer last year, and so far there were three people questioned. Actually, right now, we are really motivated because it's obvious if we give up, these people will not get any compensation at all. And the wrongdoers will continue with their business for next year. And that's something we really want to stop now.
At this time, Pho Hung Long met with attorneys who work with the La Strada organization in Prague. Long was admitted into the protection program set up for victims of human trafficking. He was hidden in a safe house and looked after by the authorities. La Strada then worked to help him return home after 3 years away.
Usually the society feels that the sex trafficking is somehow something really sensitive and people are very sorry about it. But labor trafficking, it's not that much like sensitive in the society, and people are able to tolerate, and they will rather say, okay, it's the fault of the foreigner. If he doesn't like, he can leave.
Dao Tak, north of Hanoi, is Pha Hung Long's home village. He has shared the fate of many here. In 2008, like Long, over 30 young men paid a large sum of money to obtain entry documents and a work permit for the Czech Republic. The corrupt system thus started in their own country. The Human Rights Office of the OSCE, the UN Relief Fund, and other international organizations are supporting the work being done by the local attorneys and NGOs to resolve the tree workers' case. However, state authorities generally find it hard to admit to and combat such cases. Political loss of face, economic interests, corruption, the strict migration policy. Many factors play a role when one's own country becomes the center of attention in matters regarding the violation of human rights.
The crime of human trafficking is actually the third profitable crime in the world after guns and drugs. However, we have very, very little cases when people are actually compensated, and in most cases they are returning back into the home countries without any financial resources, so they are again at risk of trafficking.
There is a disturbing increase in extreme exploitation all over the world, and whereas we make the link with the traditional slavery from a long time ago, then we see that in an international context the same amount of exploitation is actually occurring in industrialized countries, in economies where you would actually not expect them in a modern day age. The same kind of abuses occur in the agriculture in the south of Spain, agriculture in the south of Italy, or mushroom pickers in Ireland, or berry pickers in Scandinavia. Those are all specific economic activities who seem to be very prone to extreme exploitation. Tree workers' case shows how vulnerable migrant workers are on labor markets where they don't speak the language, where they don't have any support structure.
The managing directors of Less Holding have categorically declined to give any film interviews. The state forestry authorities Lesi Czeskie Republiki and the Ministry of Agriculture react to interview requests by sending out press releases and their answers in writing. They stated that they had cautioned the contractual partners to adhere to labor law and that they were supporting the state regulatory authorities. However, they do not regard themselves as being directly responsible for such matters. In a press release, the Ministry of Agriculture writes, "The exploitation of the mainly foreign migrant workers is deplorable, but neither LESI-CR nor the Ministry of Agriculture have the authority to act in this matter." After media reports about the tree workers' case, the Ministry of Labour did at least send out employment inspectors. They established that Afumicata had illegally employed workers, withdrew the agency's license, and imposed a fine of 53,000 euros. However, by that time, the company had long since stopped its activities and was bankrupt. There has never been any mention of compensation for the around 2,000 exploited individuals who worked in the Czech state forest.
Mr. Ong's conditions here last month before he left to Vietnam were really miserable. We registered him as a victim of trafficking in human beings. Unfortunately, his stay in the program was terminated by Czech police without any justification, without any argument. It was just so. And he was illegal again, and he was hiding on several places in Prague. And basically, there we were not able to renew his legal status, no matter how hard he was willing to cooperate with the police.
The letters which arrived at the attorney's office at about the same time stated the facts a little differently. The Prague police officially announced that they had stopped most of the investigations. There would be no court case in the Czech Republic.
I think that there is no way to deal with it. There, even despite some media pressure, the police doesn't want to. It's a little bit sad to see that you are helpless, that you cannot come to the result you think that should be good.
Hello, George. George, I had some news which are not so positive. What happened was that first of all there was one big investigation of all activities they did with Mr. Mercos. Then they split it. Police split it into five different individual small proceedings. And one was the tax issues. One was a fraud. One was trafficking in human beings and organized crime. And they are now terminating one after another one. And regarding civil claims, the companies are just nutshells. They don't own anything. The Wood Service Praha company that was employing you is now owned by one Vietnamese, and that guy is not in the country.
Why you could escape like this?
Unfortunately, the Czech police is just not willing to participate in trying to fight the justice now. I'm in touch with them.
They are corrupt, the both sides, and the Czech police and the Romanian police. They are corrupt.
So many things that have happened in the forest here in the Czech Republic is completely below the standard of what the Czech Republic as a first world nation should provide for workers, be they Czech workers or foreign workers. The US State Department actually reduced the Czech Republic's ranking. They have three tiers in regards to human trafficking, and the Czech Republic was moved down to the second tier this year by the US State Department because they were seen as not doing enough to protect the rights of foreign workers, and this case was one of the reasons.
Till this day, we don't have a single one, single case that somebody was found guilty of committing crime, trafficking human beings in labor exploitation in the Czech Republic, which is sad because it can say two things. It can say that either trafficking in human beings in labor exploitation, in work exploitation, doesn't exist in the Czech Republic, or there is something wrong with the system of police investigating the cases, state prosecutors, and courts.
Well, this extreme but unfortunately not isolated case of modern slavery shows just how vulnerable migrant workers are. It highlights some undeniable trends in the EU labor market and calls for an urgent and structural response from European and national governments. And that's it for this week. Do join us next time for another documentary. Until another episode right here at Aperture, it's goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Stories from the Past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, thank you so very much for joining us on today's episode of The Lantern. As always, it's a genuine pleasure and an absolute honor to be with you guys and to have a share in your precious and valuable time. And I am ever so grateful that you guys take time out of your day to hopefully join in our little discussions that we have. There's this hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam that sort of, well, to be honest, it stresses me out. His Eminence says, the opportunities in life are like passing clouds. You're looking at it for like 5 seconds, and then you drop your head to, I don't know, look at a puppy or a blade of grass or pour yourself some more tea, and you look up again and that fluff of cloud is gone. You didn't even hear it passing by. It didn't make a commotion. It didn't make loud noises. It didn't say, hey Zainab, look at me, I'm passing away. I mean, imagine if clouds made so much noise while they make their way through the sky. They were there. You noticed it for a second, and then another second it was gone. But it's always there. It's right above you. We see clouds every day. It's a part of our lives. We're so accustomed to them. We're so familiar with them. Yet, one cloud that you see once in your life, you will never, ever see ever again. That cloud is gone forever. And the idea just really stresses me out when Amir al-Mu'mineen says opportunities in life are like passing clouds. Also in today's story, opportunities in life obviously are like balls of dirt. Let's listen to the anecdote and we'll be right back.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, especially this program Lantern, so welcome. As usual, we have an interesting story at the beginning of the program. The title of this story is The Interview. Once at an interview at a reputed business school, a panel of intelligent interviewers was taking interview of prospective students for admission in the school. When one of the prospective students entered the room and nervously sat on the chair in front of them, the panel said to the boy, "We shall either ask you 10 easy questions or one really difficult question. Choose carefully as it will determine your admission to the school." The boy thought for a while and answered, "I would like to answer one really difficult question." "Well, good luck to you. You have made your choice. Now answer us. What comes first, day or night?" The boy was jolted into reality as his admission depended on the correctness of his answer to this single question. But he thought for a while and said, "It's the day, sir." "How?" asked the interviewer. "Sorry, sir, you assured me that I do not need to answer the second difficult question." He was selected for admission. Technical skill is the mastery of complexity, while creativity is the mastery of presence of mind. Creativity is intelligence having fun.
Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspect of our life.
You know, if it's a bad moment in life, it's a dark cloud, a rainy cloud, a thunderstorm, you weather that storm and you train yourself to become a better person through that relationship, through that opportunity. And if it was a nice, bright, sunny day, if it was a ball of clay with a gem in it, you appreciate it. You make the most of it. You take advantage of that moment. Because Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the messenger of kindness and the prophet of mercy, has said that we only appreciate something once it's gone. And he specifies it to two things as well, that the two things that we only appreciate, we only know what we had until poof, it's gone away. It's youth and good health. I bet a lot of us can relate with that hadith right now, especially through this pandemic. Wherever you guys are, whatever you're doing, I hope you're keeping safe and healthy. But if you've been afflicted or any of your loved ones have been afflicted or, God forbid, taken away by this illness, this virus, you would know what we're talking about right now. We take these little gems for granted. Not only do we take them for granted, we forget to realize that they are gems even. You know, we've become so familiar with them. We're like fish in water. We only start missing the water when someone pulls us out and throws us on a ship dock. And I feel that our youth is definitely something that we don't appreciate enough. We forget that maybe it has something to do with the fact that we're in a constant state of confusion and we don't know what to do with the next step of our lives and this and that, which is totally fine and natural. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But this vitality, this jubilance, this freshness, this strength, this energy, we will never have it again. I'm not saying that we necessarily need to take advantage of our youth and, you know, plan for our retirement in that way or an invest or anything. But no, just take advantage of at least this energy and go out and learn something new every day and educate yourself. And, you know, one might argue that, well, I'm young, I'm broke. But there are things that we can do that don't necessarily require that much money. Or just work as much as you can. You have no other responsibilities right now. Work and save, right? And definitely in the case of our relationships, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam, first of all, teaches us how to be in relationships. He says, interact with people in a way that when you're absent from them, they'll miss you. And when you pass away, they'll cry for you. Which basically means be the kind of person that people want to be around, you know? Be the kind of person that people will miss, people will long for, people will want to come see, people are excited to meet. And also, in a lot of ahadith, the Ahlul Bayt tell us that the best person is one whom others are safe from their torment, as in, you know, they don't trouble other people. Or the best person is one whom others are safe from their tongue. They don't use their words to say mean, rude, harsh things. They don't backbite. They don't lie. They don't curse. So many things we can learn from the Ahlul Bayt in order to help us have healthy, strong bonds and relationships with people who will only probably come once in our lifetime. And we don't know how much time we have with them. And before we know it, life is just so fragile. It will all go away in a blink of an eye. That's all the time we have for today's episode. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.